This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm interviewing Kermit Moyer, whose new book, The Chester Chronicles, will be coming out in February 2010. Hi, Kermit. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to have you on this show. The Chester Chronicles is a collection of stories. I believe you would kind of cast it as a novel in stories.
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking of it as a novel in stories.
And did you set out to do it that way, or did you write these stories and then realize that they were of a piece and created a kind of chronological story?
Sort of the latter. I wrote one or two of them just by themselves, and then I began to think about the possibility of writing a number of them and following a chronology so that you get the sort of growing up and coming of age of the narrator and the protagonist.
And I guess I should say to people who are listening, the story is centered around a character named Chester, obviously the Chester Chronicles, who's I think in many ways a disguised alter ego for you, and it starts in the 50s and takes Chester from an early age all the way up, I would say, past college, into his early adulthood.
Right, that's right.
And I do want to, I think you have a great quote at the beginning of the book that I think kind of sets the stage, which is this André Dubut quote, "Our lives are not novels, they're a series of stories. That's how we talk to each other. I say, how are you doing? And you tell me a story. Next time, you tell me a different one. A life is a collection of stories."
Exactly.
Great quote. Was that in your mind when you were doing this, or did you come to that afterwards as a way of defining the structure of the book?
It was on my mind, I think, when I was writing most of the stories. I wrote them over a period of time. I was on a sabbatical in 98, 99, and I began the stories then, and then I was on another sabbatical 7 years later in 2005, 2006, and that's when I wrote about half the book in that second sabbatical from teaching.
And when you write these stories, I'm just curious about the, your methodology. Are you writing and editing, or do you write and then let them sit and then come back to them later to edit and redo?
I edit constantly as I'm working. I'm really focused on the language, and I rewrite and rewrite as I go, as well as after I complete a draft of a story, and give it to other people to read and get some feedback after I've done everything I think I can do with it. And usually there's another set of revisions that goes on after I get some feedback from people.
Well, the stories are definitely evocative for me, both of the inner life of the kid as he is growing up. Chester is, he's struggling with his self, with his idea of self, and, as you write about, he's an army brat who moves around a lot and has to identify himself in the a changing context. And also his father's away a lot. You get the 50s pretty well, I think, through all of this. A lot of things, I'm a little bit younger than that, but I certainly remember a lot of this period and the 60s as well.
Yeah, as you said, there's a context that's very changes constantly because he moves so frequently. But he's trying to define himself as we all do as he's growing up. And I think a lot of the stories have to do with his efforts at self-definition. He wants to be both to fit in and to be, and he sees himself as being special and sort of different from other people, as most adolescents probably do.
Yeah, I think so. Although adolescents of a certain type, I think there's a certain self-consciousness that he has.
That's true.
And maybe not every kid has that.
Yeah.
There's a certain, people who read books are more likely to be thinking of themselves in that way. You compare yourself to the to the heroes of novels that you've read.
Right.
You know, they become real to you.
That's right.
As a, you know, kind of book, you know, you get kind of categorize yourself as a bookish person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe the non, you know, there are lots of people who are not inner directed and self-aware. And they wouldn't be thinking of them, you know, their comparatives to Greek mythology or, you know, heroes from the movies. And I think he's, you know, he has that sort of peripatetic self-involved.
I think of him as movie besotted.
Yeah, or he's definitely.
He's really, he's very romantic. He's lives in his head a lot. He's a very imaginative kid. He's a lot like me. You mentioned the autobiographical aspect of the stories, and for instance, one of the things he's concerned about is he hates his name, Chester. And I gave him a name like that he could find objectionable because I grew up with the name Kermit. And Kermit, I think, is worse than Chester.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Obviously,
yeah,
this has been a big issue for you.
It was certainly an issue for me. And oddly enough, I never took the advantage of the opportunity I had because we moved so often to give myself a nickname. I think now, as I look back at that time, that I should have had the wit to grab onto a name that I chose for myself.
Right, you could be anybody you want.
I could have invented myself afresh, you know, when I moved.
Right, it's sort of like, you know, when kids, I've told this to my own kids, when you go to college, you have the opportunity to be a new person. The context of growing up in high school, you know, where you do get categorized and, you know, you're in a web of social relations that is created for you, by you, and with people you've been with, in some cases, for a long time. When you get away, you know, every time you move to a new school, you get to be a new person.
That's right. Well, it was college when I finally took advantage of the freshness of the context to grab onto another name for myself. I was going through Fraternity Rush. I was wearing a name tag that said Kermit Moyer, and somebody in one of the fraternities said, "Oh, do people call you Kurt?" And I said, "Yes, they do." And nobody ever called me that before, but I became Kurt all through college and graduate school until I began publishing. Excuse me. Is that my phone or?
No, I don't hear anything.
Until I began publishing stories under the name Kermit Moyer. And then I went back, took the name back, Kermit. And now I'm happily known as Kermit.
And you're comfortable with your name.
No longer Kurt. I'm comfortable with my name.
Well, it definitely runs throughout the novel as a theme, or as I should say, throughout the stories.
Yeah.
It's a very strong sense of concern that he's really continuously bothered. And you're right that, in fact, Chester is, you know, it's maybe not the greatest name for a kid to have, but probably not as bad in that era as being Kermit.
Yeah, that's right. He prefers the name Chet, you know, the nickname Chet, which is a nickname that is frequently the case with somebody whose name is Chester.
Now, his parents call him Chessy, though.
His parents call him Chessy. He doesn't like that either.
That would seem pretty, you know, like, you know, a lot of kids don't like the nickname that their parents gave them.
Yeah, I was Kermie.
Yeah, that would be
as Kermit the Frog is called Kermie by Miss Piggy.
Right, and that probably is not a comfortable
place
to be. So it does. It is kind of interesting to think about how powerful the naming of a child can be. You know, again, you think about that when you're naming your own children.
Right.
I assume you have children that you've named differently than...
I don't have any children, but I certainly would not have named my son Kermit.
Right.
I was named after my father, who was named after a son of Teddy Roosevelt.
Right.
Kermit Roosevelt.
Right. Yeah, I remember it. So was your father uncomfortable with his name at all?
I don't think he was. He came from a large family. He had eight brothers and sisters. And he was the middle child, and he grew up in one place. And if I'd grown up in one place, I think my name would have not been a problem, because people would have been used to it, and I would have it would have just been sort of an ordinary thing, I think. But because I moved, I was always a new kid, and I always dreaded the roll call, because when the name Kermit was called, nobody had ever heard that name before. They'd all look around to see who was the unlucky person who had that name. I imagine that's what they were thinking.
Right, but of course,
the unlucky person.
Right, it might be the lucky person because you're the one getting all the attention.
That's true.
Well, so there are a couple of other themes in the book that I want to talk about. Obviously, sexuality is a big deal.
Oh yeah.
You know, the boy's search for identification through sex is pretty powerful.
Yeah, well, it was a pretty powerful element in my life, and I guess in everybody's life, as far as I can tell. Certainly, Chester is drawn to he's always got a crush on some girl from afar.
Right, one of the romanticism that you talked about before in terms of his identification with movies.
Right,
probably
exactly.
similar with the girls, and there is a crush at one stage and a relationship he has with his cousin.
That's right.
Who's a little bit older.
I had a crush on my first cousin too, although it didn't go as far as Chester's situation does.
Yeah, it's probably pretty common, I think.
Yeah, I think it is too.
And common for it to be unfulfilled.
Yeah.
But still very powerful, I think, because if you're a boy and you have cousins who are beautiful, or you know, they become attractive to you, you can't help yourself.
Right.
And then you have to deal with the, you know, maybe the self-loathing and worry about what that means. And, you know,
Chester wants to have a cool name, and he wants to be good-looking so that he can become the sort of the hero of his own life.
Right,
and,
which is almost like I imagine the impetus behind a lot of the comic strips. You know, that kids, you hear that from people who wrote comics, is that they were a form of expression as well as escape to this other self.
Yeah, yeah.
That they couldn't be.
Yeah.
But that creates this, you know, I think in your book, it creates this wonderful kind of sympathy that the reader has with the person. I mean, with Chester and going through.
Well, that's good to hear. I hope that's true.
Well, no, I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, now again, I read it as a man reading about a boy growing up. I don't know how women read it. It's a different context. They have a different understanding. So I couldn't tell you, you know, how a woman might feel about it. But it would seem to me that he is very sympathetic. He's, you know, you feel
so far. Women seem to like the book. More women have read the advanced reader's copy, I think, than men have. And they seem to respond to it very positively. So I'm happy that seems to be the case so far.
Well, that's good. I think that means that you've approached an inner life of this kid, yourself, you know, and interpret it in a way that makes him and you, someone that people want to read about.
You know, one of the funny things is, it's funny that I decided not to write a memoir, to write nonfiction. I decided to write fiction. I felt that was the best way for me to be able to tell the truth about my experience was by writing fiction.
Right.
Because that allowed me to live imaginatively through experiences that I was trying to describe in a story.
Right. Things don't have to be literally true.
Right.
They can be imaginatively true.
They truly express an emotion that's real.
Right.
But often the events that happen in the story I made them up.
Right. Which I think is. But I think that's an important element of fiction versus simply telling something that happened. It gives you the opportunity to transform it for yourself, as well as then transform it. For the reader.
My idea then was to write a present tense narrative with a retrospective point of view, which sounds contradictory. But all the stories except the prologue are in the present tense.
Right. I think that, you know, by talking about the novel or the stories in the present tense, I think you make it very evocative of the era. And what I was thinking is that people who are younger, who may not have grown up in that era, may find this a pretty interesting way to experience life in the 50s and 60s. which, you know, obviously for them, for you and for me is a much more present time because we grew up in that era.
Yeah.
But a lot, you know, obviously millions of people didn't.
Right.
And I think, you know, I wanted to compare, I think, to John Knowles' A Separate Piece, which I think is, you know, I read it when I was in high school. It had that feeling of being able to understand, you know, people growing up in a different period who I could feel the same way about.
Yeah.
And I do get that feeling from this book. You know, it's a very strong feeling of identification. I'm sure people say ask you this, but if you have a favorite story among the stories in the book.
Do I have a favorite story? I guess my favorite, in a way, is the shortest story, which is the prologue called The Color of My Eyes. It's the one that ends with a sort of punchline.
Oh, that's good. Well, for me, maybe it's just because I have a son who's 16 years old and who's learning how to drive.
I think
the learner's permit.
Learner's permit
was really terrific.
That story's coming out this winter in the Hudson Review.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I'm sure everyone who reads a book like this will pick out favorite parts or favorite stories.
That story, Learner's Permit, is totally invented. The episode that occurs in that story is when there's a woman who gives birth to a baby in the back seat of their car, Chester and his father in the car. And that's totally made up.
Well, it's pretty exotic. It's a great piece.
Yeah.
Maybe you could even call it it's just very entertaining. But it's got a lot of flair.
That's one of the stories that that friends of mine who live in the Berkshires, in the Berkshire Mountains in western Massachusetts, they've given dinner parties, and they've at each of these four dinner parties they've presented one of my stories. A bookstore owner there, the owner of the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts, Matthew Tannenbaum, sort of fell in love with these stories, and he reads the story. I don't read the story. I'm in the audience. It's like seeing your story turn into a play almost.
Right.
They have lighting effects and sound effects. And
wow. No, I think that's great. I mean, in a lot of ways, these stories are very theatrical. They could be fairly easily converted to a theater environment. You know, you could pick out some of the stories, link them together, and do a whole evening of them.
Yeah, I think Matthew would like to do that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting idea. I think the other story that I found to be, you know, extremely compelling was one that was maybe the most uncomfortable, but also had this sweetness to it, which was when Chester and a bunch of the other kids go out in the car to buy beer.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They're in Texas, I think. They're in Georgia. Georgia at that point.
In the Georgia rain.
Right, and they go and buy a beer from a black bar. It's a drive-up window. They give them $10, get a couple of six-packs, and then lock the keys of the car in the trunk when they have a flat.
That unfortunately happened to me. although the bar was not a black bar. And I added that and made the story. It turned out to be a lot about race.
Right. Well, which was a very big thing in Georgia in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that I thought that was really, really well done. That's a good
thing. The other story that is where race is a primary theme is called Native Sons, which is an allusion to the Richard Wright title, Native Son.
Right.
And that happened to me, too.
Where Richard Wright actually came to your fraternity?
Excuse me?
Where that was when Richard Wright came to your fraternity?
Ralph Ellison.
Ralph Ellison, yeah.
I think that actually happened. I'm not sure if it did or not. I've become so immersed in the imagining of it that I'm not sure if I made it up or if it actually happened.
Well, it doesn't matter then.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the nice things about fiction.
Yeah.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
Exactly.
As long as it works artistically. Well, I do think this book is a terrific collection. I really would recommend it to people, and I think it reads beautifully. It's really well done.
Well, David, I'm really happy to hear you say that.
Well, thanks. And so thanks, Kermit Moyer, for being interviewed on my program. Your book is The Chester Chronicles. This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot.